Les colloques du Collège de France.
So the next presentation will be given by Benjamin Stamm. So I know also Benjamin for a very, very, very long time. So it started at Brown. Then he went to Berkeley, and with Eric Ancès, we followed him in order to work on solvation problem. And then we were very happy that he got a position at Sorbonne University. And then he went to Aachen, and now he's in Stuttgart. And he's in on the chair of numerical mathematics for high performance computing. And he will present a reduced basis method for the ground state eigenvalue computation. Okay, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Yvan. Thank you for this kind introduction, and thank you for this invitation to this wonderful workshop. My viewpoint here is a bit complementary, but still on eigenvalue problems. So the difference is, A, I focus here on, let's say, solid state physics and not chemistry. It's a huge difference, although it's also about eigenvalue problems. And yeah. My quantum particles are not electrons, they are spins. Yeah? So we're going to that. But then after physical motivation, I remove all the physics and we speak about linear algebra, more or less. Huh? Because reduced basis assumption is also always the case. You have a truth model, you have a basis, and then everything is finite dimensional. Okay. Try to convince you also a bit to shape the view on how to look at eigenvalue problems and how to tackle it, and to convince you that there are some additional difficulties, even for linear eigenvalue problems, compared to source problems. Okay, so as a motivation, you can just look at the axioms of quantum mechanics. And for instance, it states, okay, a state, okay, there's this weird bracket notation. Think about even either L2 function or just the vector in the Euclidean space. And we have a complex separable Hilbert space, potentially of very high dimensions. Okay, we have a space. Secondly, we have observables. Yeah. And the main message I want to convey here is that it's all about spectral projectors and eigenspaces. Yeah. So it says that every physical observable or property is or corresponds to an associated linear self-adjoint, possibly unbounded operator O, acting on the Hilbert space. And the spectral theorem lets them, at least here in the finite dimensional case, decompose it into a sum of eigenvalues and spectral projectors. Yeah? So the key message here is already that eigenspaces are relevant, not individual eigenvectors or eigenfunctions, relating to the discussion before about uniqueness. Yeah? Because eigenspaces are unique. Okay, so this is just a little bit to motivate why at the end we want, assume we have computed the state psi, there is some this one rule that tells you at the end we should compute this this average here of the observable with respect to the state here. So in terms of, if this is a L2 Hilbert space, then this would be somehow the L2 inner product between psi and O applied to psi. If this is just the linear world, the discrete world, this is just a matrix. This is a scalar product of psi with O applied to psi. Okay. So this notation, don't be scared. It's rather trivial. Second, that makes it difficult is somehow if you have two subsystems, say two quantum particles. You combine them, you have to construct or look at the tensor product Hilbert space, which explains the explosion of degrees of freedom if you have a many-body quantum particle. So the moral of the story is eigenvalues of Hermitian matrices are important. Eigenspaces are the correct notion, not individual eigenvectors. So phases of eigenvectors are not physical observables in the view of the quantum mechanics. And energetically interesting eigenvalue is the smallest of the Hamiltonian. That's what Virginie referred to the ground state. So you take the energy operator, you look at the smallest eigenvalue. That's what a lot of physics is in there, at least at the so-called zero temperature case. Okay, so The curse of dimensionality appears from the following. So you consider a quantum system consisting of one particle. So this is just here c to the d. And assume this one quantum particle has d states. So if you have now a many-body system with L number of quantum particles, each with d state, then this corresponds to c to the power of cn, where n is d to the power of L. Okay? So if you have a simple, what's called a spin one-half problem, then you just see that adding one particle, it doubles the dimension of the Hilbert space. So very quickly, it becomes very expensive. You can even look at spin one systems. There are three states, so you triple the dimension by adding one particle. A very concrete example that here we consider kind of as the fruit fly is the following. I don't expect you to understand this, don't worry, but you see there are some notions. You can here use Kronecker products to embed a local operator with identities, pattern from the left and the right, to make them global matrices if you want. So there are some basis of Hermitian operators here on C2, etc. What is important here is in the physical context, so physicists like to do analysis to change these parameters. And in view of reduced basis method, it's trivially we want to change these parameters. For instance, here you have some different couplings, next neighbor coupling, or there's H is the external magnetic field strength that couples to your system, etc. Yeah? So very simply for us mathematicians, we take it as a sum. Huh? We have scalar, parameter-dependent analytic functions, and we have fixed matrices. As an example here for this, you have also some observables. This is the magnetizations. And if you do a sweep through this parameter space here, you see, for instance, that you have here integer values and so-called magnetization plateaus. And for instance, this is the ferromagnetic phase because it's a spin one-half system. You have a spin up or spin down. And here, all the particles are aligned in spin up. OK. Let's leave physics away. Let's put our mathematical abstraction here. As I said, we consider fixed matrices. We considered, actually, this could also be C, but this could be, these are scalar functions, theta 1 to theta q. And we have here that we call, in the reduced basis context, the affine decomposition of our operator. The same story here. In physics, all happens all the times that you have naturally this form. Yeah? So the goal here is to build a small-scale surrogate model for accurate and efficient approximation of the smallest eigenvalue space, eigenvalue and corresponding eigenvalue space for under variation of the parameter. How you do this? Well, you have an energy, you look at the Euler-Lagrange equation, which is basically just the eigenvalue problem. Note here that due to non-uniqueness, if you look for eigenvalues and eigenvectors, this is a matrix with a priori unknown number of columns here, which is the dimension of the eigenspace corresponding to the smallest eigenvalue here. Okay. Then at the end, you can build a projectum, compute your observable. But that's we ignore here in this talk for sake of simplicity. Okay. So the usual greedy context is find suitable representative eigenvectors here spanning the eigenspace, put them, patch them together in a reduced basis matrix with R columns. So this spans the R-dimensional subspace in Cn. So it's simply just like this. Then thanks to this affine decomposition, you can pre-compute here those blocks. You can apply here these reduced basis from the left and the right. Then you have this. And so that's the usual trick here in reduced basis. You only have to store these small-scale matrices that are independent on the parameter. And whenever you have to change the parameter, you just have to reassemble this small dimensional sum here. OK. Then you can solve the reduced eigen problem, find a ground state, reduced basis eigenvalue, and corresponding eigenvectors. Note here, it has also a certain multiplicity. There's no guarantee, depending on the choice of your reduced basis, that this is the same number than the truth one. We're coming to that later. that solves the eigenvalue problems. And again, this Z here, yeah, is the low dimensional representation in this, or the coefficient in these reduced spaces. Okay, since this is a bit small, I can also make it large. So this is the dimension, is the linear algebra picture. And at the end, you compute the observable. Of course, reduced basis for eigenvalue problems is not new. Is actually, even in the early days of the reduced basis method, there are contributions from structural mechanics on eigenvalues that led to the whole development. And Yvon was one of the earliest ones in the 2000s to also do this from a reduced basis, let's say a modern viewpoint with a greedy algorithm, etc. There has been some following work. I don't claim this list is complete, but surprisingly, also by Andrea, who is here in the audience, but surprisingly, there are not that many contributions. Okay, so this is the roadmap for the talk, for the rest of the talk. I want to speak a little bit about the obstacles compared to normal source problems for these ground state eigenvalue problems. Eigenvalue crossings and changing multiplicity is a topic. The eigenspaces are stressed enough, I think. Residuals are not enough, we will see as well. Then we go to a certified reduced basis context where we try to give these guaranteed estimates that in the academic setting are so important, and maybe also for the physical viewpoint to be sure that we have a good approximation. And then we go into convergence analysis just around one single parameter point, but where we add, through perturbation theory, higher derivatives with respect to the parameter. Okay, some obstacles. Please, when I don't say anything, eigenvalues are always without counting multiplicity, so real proper eigenvalues, so there's really a gap between the first and the second one, even if this is 16 times degenerate. So M is the dimension of this first eigenspace. So if you assume that you have locally at least a good enough separation, you can have here this representation rule of the projector onto the smallest eigenspace through a Cauchy formula, which gives you a locally well-defined projector. You can prove that it's even analytic, but not the individual eigenvector labels, because you need to do this in a consistent way. And the local regularity implies approximability by Taylor series, which will be important in the last part. Okay. Just general notation that is used here. Here this curly W is an eigenspace. We represent it by the orthogonal projector onto this space. So the space itself is the range of its projector. If you have an orthonormal unitary matrix, then you can just write it like this. So lambda k and lambda chi KRB denote the exact and the reduced basis eigenvalues without counting multiplicity. These are the eigenspaces, and so corresponding as P1 is the exact orthogonal projector, and P1RB is the reduced basis projector. Is known result is you can here, let me first say that now we want to measure distances between eigenspaces, because I made a claim eigenspace is the correct mathematical notion, so we have to define how we compute distances. And you can just take the difference of their projectors, orthogonal projectors, in the Frobenius norm, which is the Hilbert-Schmidt setting in a discrete space. And if they have the same rank, so if they project onto the space of same dimension, then this difference can be seen as the orthogonal of one applied to the other one. Okay, let me come to the eigenvalue crossing problem, very simple toy problem. So here you will see the sine, and here's the cosine, and you have eigenvalue crossings at these marked points, and almost everywhere you have a dimension 1, except at these crossing points you have a dimension 2 here and here, and here you have the E2, which is the smallest eigenspace, and here is this E1 that spans the smallest eigenspace. So basically it's a mass, and the message I want to convey is that this object which you have chosen to represent the eigenspace, namely the orthogonal projector, is discontinuous with respect to the parameters. But whether it spans on an eigenspace of 2 dimension or 1 dimension or 16 dimension here, I can still build differences, and I have mathematically a way here on the left side to compare spaces of non-equal dimension. Okay. So the second problem, residuals are not enough. So for the reduced basis approximation, let's say it's just given in some way, you can compute the blockwise residual. Recall that this is a matrix, so this is a residual with as many columns as you have detected as degeneracy of your ground state. If you compute the norm of this and this gives you 0, doesn't mean that your reduced basis projector is actually the one you're looking at, namely the projector on the ground state. It only confirms that you have found the invariant subspace of your matrix. So physics notation, they would use here this commutator, but it only means that these are real eigenvalues or eigenvectors. So these W's, they are real eigenvectors, but they could be higher ones. Or you have a 16 times degenerate eigenstate and you only find 10 of them, right? You still get a 0 residual. It just tells you found the correct eigenvectors, but not which ones. So in order to do a certification, we need more additional information. So to wrap up this first warmer part is for cursive source problem, your solution is you, and through the PD theory, you always have uniqueness. You're just one. Here we have an eigenspace. And here in the, let's say, at least in some fruit fly problems where you have uniform cursivity over your parameter domain, you have analytic solution maps. Here we also have, if we wouldn't have these eigenvalues crossings,
The rest we skip here.
Good, main message, eigenvalue crossings are nasty and residuals are not reliable. Okay. Let us come to a certified reduced basis setting where we want to assemble a reduced basis for the smallest eigenspace. Okay, as has been established over the years, let's say last 20 years, we use a greedy context. So you just take one of the first parameter points, you compute the eigenvalue corresponding eigenspace, you put this in your reduced basis space, you scan through the parameter space, you must have an error estimator that is certified in the best case to pick you the next point, you compute the corresponding eigenspace, you put it in, and you loop until this is small enough. Under some circumstances, you can prove that you have certified convergence if the Kolmogorov end width is also decaying. Okay, so the question is how can we find a good indicator here? So please recall this. So the strategy is we need to upper bound this error, but we need also to certify that the dimension we're projecting on is the same. So we need to guarantee that this holds here in our training, so to say. So this is a simple result. Surprisingly, we weren't able to find it in the literature. If you know it from somewhere, please let me know. It says if A is not a multiplication of the identity, then this projection error here can be bounded by 1 over what is the gap, the spectral gap, so the difference between the first excited, or let's say second eigenvalue and the first eigenvalue. By the way, this should be a lambda. This is a typo, lambda 2 minus lambda 1. This is the reduced basis approximation, and we compute here the residual, and has been shown here. And this is the reduced basis eigenvalue minus the true one. Of course, this doesn't give you a computable quantity yet, but we can at least work at it. So we will do the following. So Sierkiewicz Krasnow came up with a very nice tool to compute lower bounds of eigenvalues. I will comment on the next slide. So this allows us here to upper bound is minus lambda 1 if we have a lower bound of lambda 1. And we need to also have a lower bound of the gap in order to have here a computable certified estimator. But that's the roadmap to derive it. Okay. Now, we have to consider eigenvalues counting multiplicity. So they have now tildes. So you call your eigensolver, you have an n-dimensional matrix, you get n eigenvalues. But they might be the same. That's what I'm calling counting multiplicities. And a very efficient computable upper bound by the min-max problem, because we have a rational method, is just this reduced basis, because we are minimizing the Rayleigh coefficient in a subspace that is smaller than full space, that gives a very natural upper bound. So upper bounds are trivial. Lower bound, as I said, is a bit more challenging. And this idea by Sierkiewicz and Krasnow was to use perturbation theory combined with the successive constraint method that has been around in the reduced basis method since also, I guess, since 20 years. And this mixing gives a very nice lower bounds for the smallest eigenvalue. What we were able was to generalize it to higher eigenvalues using the same techniques, but a bit more ugly and technical. And secondly, very nice is you have here a computable condition. So whatever this eta star is, if it's larger than the reduced basis eigenvalue plus something you can compute, you can, for this mu, guarantee that the two dimensions are the same. Okay, this is key in the upcoming certification, because everywhere we have this condition that the reduced basis space dimension and the true space dimension of the eigenvalue must be the same. It's a sufficient condition for dimension recovery. Okay, so now let's look what tools we have at hand at this point. So I just said we have something that we can online check computationally. If this holds, we have this. Further, we have this efficient computable upper bounds, trivial, lower bounds more involved using the Sierkiewicz-Krasnow technique. So you have lower bounds, upper bounds, but only for each eigenvalue counting multiplicities. But if you know that the dimension is the same, you know that the k from the reduced basis and the k from this one, they belong to the same eigenspace, then you can use them to take an upper bound of lambda 2 minus a lower bound of lambda 1 to do a guaranteed upper bound of the gap plus a guaranteed lower bound of the gap as well. So these are the tools. We can guarantee eigenvalues from below above, but also the gap. So starting with this one, we saw this can be bounded by this if the dimensions are equal. We can check this. Then you can here use a lower bound that is certified at the lower bound of the gap if we have here also dimension to be that are equal. So the algorithm will be the following. We have a two-stage procedure. The first stage is you compute a reduced basis to approximate actually the first and the second eigenspace to get a good handle on the gap here with a separate reduced basis. After that, you do a second one and you just target for the first eigenspace, but you have this model here to have good, efficient evaluation of this of the spectral gap. So the stage one is, as I said, we want here to have a reduced basis gap estimation. And for this, you assemble here a reduced basis for the first and second eigenvalue, which we call V gamma. We use this error indicator in the greedy. The only target in the greedy is to have accuracy in the gap. The rest doesn't matter. So we just looked at the guaranteed upper bound minus the guaranteed lower bound in a relative measure will be driven down to as small as possible in this greedy. So this is now this estimator in here. And note, since I go for the first and second eigenspaces, at this point here, I have to include the first and second eigenspaces to my reduced spaces to well approximate here lambda 2 and lambda 1 simultaneously. And then you can check for the dimension recovery and iterate until you have convergence. So at the end, this reduced basis you provide has a reliable and certified approximation of the spectral gap, where you have a guaranteed lower bound involving here the tolerance that you put, 10 to minus 8, whatever, 10 to minus 6, 4, for all training points, and you have, if you have the same dimension that you can check for points that were not in your training training points, then you can give a lower bound if this is positive, otherwise it's meaningless. Okay, then you can go to the second stage. So you can take the assembled reduced basis from stage one with tolerance and the gap estimation. Then the goal is just to construct the final reduced basis space for the first eigenspace. You use this error indicator that we developed before. This is a guaranteed lower bound on the training set. This is a guaranteed lower bound thanks to the Sierkiewicz-Kresman technology. And then we have a problem with... No, it's coming back. All right. So, okay, good. Maybe it's overheating. Good, so at the end, what do we have? We have guaranteed error, epsilon error on the training points and on the all the other points, we can check whether dimensions are the same. If it's the case, we have some modified upper estimator. Okay, so So let's see how this works in practice. This is our XXC model that I introduced briefly. We don't need to understand it. So you see here, this is the reduced basis computed gap, and it goes here to zero. It's just that you represent, let's say, like a Venn lines on the Cartesian grid. So this explains the spikes, but here it goes actually to zero. Here you see which points are chosen by the greedy estimator. And the final dimension of the reduced basis is 264, and we have like about 60,000 degrees of freedom. Then you can go to stage two. Since we only approximate the first eigenspace, we have a considerably smaller reduced basis, about half of it. And here, what do we see? We see the approximation error over the training grid and the chosen points, as well as some convergence history. This is the certified error estimator. This is the residual part. This is the eigenvalue part. The sum of the two builds this one, and this is the true error. Let's go to part two about this local Taylor reduced basis. If you look into the literature, this idea for source problem has been proposed already in the mid-2000s, I think. There was the Hermit type reduced basis method, also Taylor type, etc. So for eigenvalue problems, it's a bit more natural, I would say, because there's this eigenvalue perturbation theory that is a way to compute derivative of the eigenvectors or eigenspaces with respect to the parameters. So we have now a more general setting. We look at the projector only locally around the mu zero. But we look at the k smallest eigenspaces. Each of them has dimension m1, and these are these eigenvalues here. That's our object. Since the total eigenprojector, since you have a gap between k and k plus 1, because these are real eigenvalues, distinct ones, at least locally, it is analytic, so you can write it here as a Taylor series, and the first obvious thing is to truncate it, right? But there are some problems. A, this truncated one is not a projector, while the infinite series here is a projector. Secondly, this P beta, these are large matrices, they're all dense, and there are many of them, especially if the parameter dimension is larger. We are not considering here a one-dimensional setting, which is kind of usual for eigenvalue perturbation theory, but this is here also a p-dimensional parameter here. So with increasing truncation order, there are exponentially many terms here, and they're dense. So that's not the way to go. Nonetheless, you can show that the range of this projector here, or of this is not a projector, but of this matrix, in this range exists the m-dimensional subspace, which we call cube perturbation theory, that satisfies good approximation properties that you would expect from a Taylor series development. But here we Taylorize somehow the projector onto the eigenspace. Not individual eigenvalues, not individual eigenvectors, just the whole projector together. And so the idea is obvious that we take the span of these ranges of these individual p betas as the reduced basis space, and that's what we define here. You take these perturbation modes, you take the ranges, and you span them, and that's your Taylor reduced basis space. If you have a single eigenvalue with single multiplicity, just one, then this would just, and the one-dimensional parameter space, this would be just the eigenvector. The derivative of the eigenvector with respect to mu, the second derivative, etc. That's what be what's in perturbation theory for eigenvectors. Huh? But the question is, how can you efficiently assemble this, and what are the approximation properties? So the key idea here is that at mu zero, it's a projector onto m-dimensional space. So you can write here as this sparse matrix product. You know that the ranges are the same. Please note that here I use the notation range of a column matrix with these columns. I mean this kind of the span space, the space spanned by these column vectors. Now you perturb it a little bit, and you want to find a thing. So also m, so n times n dimensional matrix k that is zero at mu zero. But the range of mu plus k here is the same than the original projector. And you can prove that this exists and is analytic. This is closely connected to what's called intermediate normalization in perturbation theory. Then the idea is to develop this analytic k into orders here as well and compute the ranges. We're not interested in the full projector, the truncated one, but just the ranges of this. And now here you see these are ranges of tiny thin matrices, which is computationally tractable, A to compute, B to store. Okay. Here is a theorem that shows why we should expect convergence. Okay. Let A be Hermitian. B, a projector, let's say the exact eigenprojector. Pi is a projector on the reduced basis subspace, just the full reduced basis subspace. And pi RB is the thing you think is the reduced basis projector onto the eigenspace you're targeting. And then, under some assumption on the spectrum, I'm not going in there, you have something like this, that the difference of the projectors are bounded by a constant like this times how well this space here is approximating the exact eigenspace. Yeah, this is a perp, so this is small, the better these approximation properties are. So note also the similarity with Sears lemma somehow. Yeah, so you have here best approximation error, you have here 1 plus something, so in Sears lemma you would expect here the coercivity constant and the continuity constant. If you look what this residuum is, if you put away these projectors, you have a norm of A. There is some, at least on a spiritual level, close connection to Sears lemma. Okay, similar results have been reported already in the literature by Ovtchinnikov. Please apologize my pronunciation. Okay, a second result. as often you observe that the eigenvalues for any enumeration method is converging in the twice as fast as the eigenvectors. It is very natural to prove for eigenvectors. In this projector framework, we were not able to find an appropriate formula explaining this. And so we looked a bit around. There are some works here by Soon 1991, but this includes somehow the spread of the matrix. So this are half a page of manipulation, but it's very nice to see that the trace of AP, this is the sum of exact eigenvalues minus the sum of real spaces eigenvalues, can be explained by something like this, where you have the difference of projectors to the squared. Huh?
Okay, how does it work in practice now? Again, our toy model. Now we pick four different points here in the phase diagram here. This is minus 1, 0, 0, 0, etc. And you see here the truncation order, and R is the radius basis space dimension, depending on L, and this is an upper bound, this is a theoretical estimate. So you see when you start down here, that's probably the most complex point here, you start already with a 16-fold degenerate ground state, yeah, because all these eight magnetization plateaus come together to this point. Yeah? Whereas in other parts, it's way more trivial how the space dimension grows, etc. If you look a little bit closer into one of them, let's say here, so we have here the eigenvalue projector error between the two. You see that here, actually, you have what physicists call the phase transition. So here, you have an eigenvalue crossing here. So you see it diffuses a bit on the other side, but not too much. You see the squaring error that if you take the Ritz value sum, so the sum of eigenvalues minus the sum of reduced basis eigenvalues, you have the squaring effect. This is expected. You can plot nice diagrams where you have the predicted theorem, how it should converge with a rate L plus 1. And this is what we see if you take the difference between the eigenvalues and the eigenprojector, we should see a squaring effect, and that's also what we show here. Good. Last line on numerics. So you can also compare it to traditional perturbation theory. So this is the reduced spaces method at this very point down here. And if you compare it with perturbation theory is something that uses local regularity analysis to develop your projection matrix, and you see it stops at the boundary here. You don't have zero approximability. But if you take the range of your projector plus do a reduced basis minimization of your energy function in this subspace spanned by the projector, you can also go across phase transitions and have some decent approximability. And this method has also been discovered in a different context in nuclear physics called eigenvector continuation. And they also observed the very same similar behavior. Good, this brings me to the end. I hope I convinced you that eigenspaces, respectively the projector onto the eigenspaces, is the correct notion to deal with eigenvalue problems, because in the parametrized setting, you might have changing dimension on your eigenspace, so individual eigenvector doesn't make sense, in my opinion. The additional complexities compared to source problems, like the residual being zero, doesn't mean you have the real solution you want to have, because you have non-uniqueness somehow, because you have different eigenvalues equations. The method one was a global one. I showed you how to construct the certified reduced basis method for the computation of the eigenspace corresponding to the lowest eigenvalue. And it was built through a two-stage greedy process. And the second part was locally around one shot. What does happen if I enrich my reduced basis with perturbative modes? That means the eigenspace, or we use the density matrix perturbation theory. We take the projector, we perturb it, or differentiate it or write it in a Taylor series and take the ranges of this matrix. The perspective on this, we want to extend the certified part, not just for the smallest eigenspace, but a sum of eigenspaces, and to do also reduced basis method for what is called open quantum systems. I thank you for your attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.